Uh-oh.
Okay, good afternoon. It's time to call our meeting of the Champaign County Mental Health Board. Okay.
Ready?
Oh, Lynn, will you call the roll, please?
I will. Astrid Berkson. Eileen Danavy. Bill Gleason. Susan Fowler. Dolores Henry.
Here.
Mike McClellan. Tom Moore, Julian Rappaport, and Deborah Townsend. Thank you.
Thank you, Lynn. Item number three, citizen input, public participation. So if there's, I know we have the UP Center. Please state your name and...
My name is Maggie Thomas, and I am the president of the board of directors at the UP Center of Champaign County. And I'd like to just tell you a little bit about the work we're doing and speak to you about our interest in funding from the Mental Health Board. The UP Center is an LGBTQ community center. We're the only such in Champaign County. And one of our key programs, our longest running program, is our youth program. We offer social and support programming, special events, access to supportive and affirming adults and mental health providers to LGBTQ youth throughout Champaign County. Some of our youth who access the programming come from Champaign-Urbana, but about half of the youth come from outlying rural areas in the county, smaller towns. We have had the huge privilege of being funded by the Champaign County Mental Health Board for the past two fiscal years, specifically in support of our youth program. We've had about $15,000 a year of funding, and that's allowed us to employ a youth coordinator who worked directly with our youth program, was able to do advocacy, outreach, and provide ongoing drop-in hours for youth only in our center, a dedicated youth crisis line via telephone, and then extensive support and social services. Due to your constraints on budgeting, which we certainly understand from a small nonprofit perspective, we did not receive funding this year. And that has very significantly impacted our youth program. Our program has shrunk since we lost our funding in July. We're no longer employing that staff member, the youth coordinator, so we do not have a paid staff member dedicated to working with LGBTQ youth in the community. This is very concerning to us. I'm a social worker. I work in this community. What I know that the UP Center has been able to provide is the only LGBTQ youth programming in Central Illinois. There is limited programming available to youth through other venues, but there is nowhere else offering explicitly and exclusively LGBTQ youth programming. We have been able to evaluate our program through some collaboration with doctoral students at the University of Illinois. We have seen improvements in our youth's mental health, in their sense of the supportiveness of their community, in their sense of having access to adults who can help and support them should they need that. We've been very pleased with the success we've had, and it's simply very concerning to me that we are not able to continue to grow our program without the ongoing financial support of the Mental Health Board. I'm well aware you don't have a lot of extra funds laying around, but what I would like to propose is that if there are any excess funds available from last fiscal year, I would like to ask you to consider designating some of those to the UP Center's youth program. Even a small amount of support for a very small center like us can make a huge difference. So if there is funding available and if you would be able to dedicate some of that to our program, we would certainly appreciate the support, and we feel we can offer a crucial mental health service to youth in this community. I'd be more than happy to answer any questions you might have about the program as well.
Thank you very much. Could I have a show of hands from the board to see how many people would be interested to consider her offer if we find out from Peter that we do have some extra money?
I'd want to ask some questions if we were going to do that.
Of course. Okay.
If we're going to discuss it and have to answer questions, then.
I didn't want.
I'm not prepared to say.
Okay.
I want to make sure what that means, right?
Okay, I didn't want a long debate. Just kind of like give Peter some opportunity to know if the money does show up, then maybe we could try to help them out. We don't have the money right this minute. But anyway, we'll go to the questions and then I'll ask that same question. Is that okay?
Yep. And certainly if you felt like down the line you'd like something prepared for us, or if you'd like to look at the reports we've provided to you all for the last couple of years before you made a final decision, we could supply that information.
Okay.
Questions? Oh, I didn't necessarily want to ask the questions now.
Okay.
I wanted to, if we're going to reconsider it, I will have questions.
Okay. Oh, okay. Peter, do you have some comments you'd like to make?
We're in the process of reviewing the end of last contract year. The audits are coming in. And I will be able to give you next month a read on what whether we have any excess revenue from contracts that we anticipate will be returned. And then we can bring that to the board. This was obviously one of the applications we got. We'll bring out the application from last year, and then that could be something that could be considered.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you, Maggie. Any more questions for Maggie? So you'll hear from us, yay or nay, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Okay, do we have any additions to the agenda?
More public participation.
Public participation.
Oh. Well, I'm really jumping the gun for our presentation later on. I apologize. Please state your name and your organization.
Hi, I'm Christine Mayer, and I work at Compass Counseling and Consulting.
Daniel Applegate, also with Compass Counseling and Consulting.
I just wanted to thank you so much for giving us, we're just going to take a few minutes to introduce ourselves. We are Compass Counseling and Consulting. We want to help our clients navigate their way on a positive path to growth and well-being. We're a small group of dedicated therapists with over 40 years of combined experience. And our goal is to help clients resolve their challenges in their lives. We offer complementary therapy approaches and techniques. We specialize in individual, couples, families, group therapy. We can offer training and supervision. We hope to unearth negative thinking patterns that may be holding our clients back and steer them onto a more healthy course.
And I think part of the vision of what we had when we started Compass was to not just be another private practice in town. The consultation piece is going to be really important for us moving forward because we aim to get into the schools and work with area school districts and focus on school violence, bullying, preparing workshops and presentations for district-wide social workers, school psychologists, things like that. Another aim for me personally is to work with vicarious trauma with first responders. And so I don't know how unique that is in the community, but that's something that I see as a great benefit. If you guys want any more information, feel free to ask us questions. We have a website that is compasschampagne.com. And the third partner here is Dr. Renee St. Clair, and she couldn't make it, but she worked in New Mexico doing a very similar school-based family therapy and training organization and worked in over 12 school districts there. So we're new on the block, but we have great ambitions to work with the schools, and if there's anything that that we can address for you, please let us know.
And we have brochures.
And we have brochures and our business cards over there. So please keep us in mind if you have any clients to refer.
Do any of the board members have questions for them? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do we have any other public participation? Okay, then we'll close it. Thank you all for coming. Now, do we have any additions to the agenda? Okay. Agenda item number 5 is CCDDB information. Peter, would you like to say a couple comments?
Actually, I don't have any particular comments at this point. One of the items on the agenda is the amendment to the intergovernmental agreement, which I think we will be considering later. But at this point, we have a number of members from the DD board here, I think, tonight, right? Do you have anything, Sue, that you want to add? Okay.
Thank you, Peter. Mm-hmm. At this time, we need to approve our minutes from July 23rd, 2014, and September 23rd, 2014 board meetings. The minutes are included in the packet, and I need a motion and a second. To approve.
Can I move that they both be approved? I do.
Okay.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and second. Now we can have questions, additions, or comments. Okay, hearing none. All in favor, just say yes.
Yes.
Oppose. So the minutes from those two meetings are approved. The only thing I wanted to say under the president's comments is to congratulate Barb Bresner and Peter and Lynn and Mark and Tracy and Chandra and everybody. Nancy, Stephanie, did I leave out anybody? Mark, put a wonderful job at the Disabilities Expo. Great job. Okay, Peter, do you have any comments tonight?
Yeah, I would just like to echo the good job that Barb did, and the expo was fantastic this year. And we have booklets for all board members from the expo, and we will be providing those to the county board also, because I think they should have direct information about what's happened, because this was a wonderful event. The only comment that I have relates to our state association. We are in the process now of restructuring. That's the association that represents 708 boards and 377 boards. We're restructuring at this point. And one of the things we're going to have is a 20% dues reduction, which will free up money that can be used for other purposes here. That's going to be happening, and I'll keep you informed about the changes that are occurring there. That's it for me.
Thank you, Peter. Now, item number 9 are staff reports. So I think we could defer that somewhat, but we do have a little time if any board members have questions. Is that okay? Asterisk.
There's no page on these, but on the court diversion summary that you have.
Which, whose report?
It's court diversion.
That would be part of the performance outcome reports. Is that what that is? Yes, it is.
Yeah.
That's an item under new business. But if you want to, if you have a question you want to ask now, that's fine.
Yeah.
It's just on this page, the difference between the people who completed the PLL program and the people who had no contact at all.
Mark?
Yes, that's in relation to the referrals that come through the Youth Assessment Center to PLL. And they actually use a little different definition for recidivism than we have used for, I guess, PLL in the past, like when we did the study, the recidivism study that was discussed last year. So they use no contact, the Youth Assessment Center uses no contact, contact, and then a rearrest, whereas generally what's used is a conviction. So they're using a little more stringent, and I can't really speak to the results that they're specifically reporting there. That's just data that they've collected and that they're reporting in relation to what the court diversion services are providing.
So is that Prairie Center or Community Elements?
Likely that is Community Elements. Okay. Front end.
Okay, front end. Okay, thank you. Are there more questions? Okay, then we'll go on to, board to board is next. Would you be okay if we deferred this until later? Board to board? Okay. Now, we could give a little time to agency information. Do we have any agencies who would like to come forward and say anything? Okay. Okay, the financial report, we need a motion and a second to accept the financial report.
So I'll make that motion.
Okay, it's been moved and second to accept the financial report. Do we have any questions or comments about it? Nancy is here. Okay, then if you are in favor of accepting, say aye.
Aye.
Oppose? So it looks like we accepted it, Nancy. Now, I've been just rush. Here we go. To the new business, agenda item number 13. Item A, the criminal justice mental health presentation. It's my understanding this is at least 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you can get started. Thank you.
Go
I'm Bruce Barnard from Community Elements, and...
Sue Whitman.
Sue's the Director of Adult Recovery Services, and I'm a consultant that's doing some work in the area of criminal justice and reentry. So we are not going to take 30 minutes. We're going to take, hopefully, about 5 or 10 to give you an opportunity to hear from Joel Sanders and from Alan Jones as well. What I'm really very quickly going to do is to summarize for you some of the services that we have that are specifically related to criminal justice, how they fit together, and some of the challenges that we see, as well as some recommendations going towards looking forward for us to pursue opportunities and for you from a planning standpoint to look at opportunities. Just to review what we see as the goals of our criminal justice response is to provide a coordinated response with jail staff, correctional health care, which is the health care provider in the jail, law enforcement, and other community providers to try to provide a continuum of services for the folks that are involved in the criminal justice service. Engage and provide essential crisis intervention, mental health, and substance abuse services in the community to prevent incarceration. In a crisis situation or in a prevention situation, in the jail to reduce recidivism and link those folks to community resources, in the community to reduce recidivism. So that may be the same people who were identified in the jail, or it may be people who we identified in the community and engaged and hopefully prevented them from becoming incarcerated, and after incarceration to reduce recidivism. We put the support that you provide for criminal justice services into three programs: our Crisis Access and Benefits Program, which supports benefit counseling, attempting to acquire Medicaid or other health insurance benefits for clients to pay for primary health care as well as behavioral health services, the Crisis Line, and the crisis team, and I'll talk a little bit more about how that relates to criminal justice. Criminal justice integrated behavioral health is services for substance use and co-occurring substance use and mental health problems. Criminal justice problem-solving courts is screening assessment, case management, and counseling in the jail and associated with the problem-solving courts or the drug court. In addition to that, the county has funded us to provide some services to the reentry population. And that is to coordinate a reentry council to plan and develop programs specifically for offender reintegration in Champaign County, as well as to do screening, linkage, and coordination of services. And we are about 6 months into that process right now. In our Crisis Access and Benefits Program, we do crisis debriefing for traumatic events. We can do situational assessments and crisis team screenings in the community, hopefully to deflect from the emergency room or from incarceration. We're involved with the CIT, which you'll hear more about. CIT training regarding hospitalizations and petitions. One of the real challenges that we have is that when law enforcement encounters someone in the community and they're transported to the emergency room and assessed for crisis intervention, whether or not they're hospitalized is up to the physician. And so sometimes we run into situations where the crisis team may be recommending hospitalization, but the physician is not, and that creates an issue for all of us, including us, the individual involved, and law enforcement. We have a contract with Healthcare Consumers to do benefit enrollment at the county jail. And we think that it's really important for us to make sure that people who are in the county jail are enrolling in benefits in order to access behavioral health services and primary health care. Criminal justice and integrated behavioral health is providing group and individual treatment for clients with co-occurring substance use and mental health. We're doing substance use assessments in the county jail, substance use assessments in specialized groups at the probation office, moral recognition therapy, and anger management. Criminal Justice Problem Solving Court, screening assessment and case management services at the jail, screening assessment and case management services for justice-involved clients in the community, and where we are a part of and participate in the drug court team. In FY14, we screened 517 clients for mental health and substance abuse at the jail. And if you look at where we've engaged clients in specialty courts, we engaged about 62 new clients. In criminal justice and integrated behavioral health, we engaged clients, we engaged 60 clients. It's kind of difficult to determine exactly how many people at the jail were engaged in services, but in looking at that and taking out anyone who was engaged as a result of a referral from probation or from a family member, it looks like our engagement rate is approximately 10% of the clients that we screen at the jail are actually engaged in services. So that's not as high as we would like it, but actually it's probably pretty good when I compare it to what other programs are able to do in that kind of population. One of the things that's really important and I wanted to highlight for you a little bit is the complexity of the funding. And I think it was no one's intent going into this, and it may not be anything that we can solve, but one of the things that we have done unintentionally is to create some silos around funding ourselves in terms of which program is the client in. Are they able to move from this program to this program to receive this service? So the importance of mental health board, I think, is really illustrated in this chart, because you are providing some revenue for services that no one else is. And without your funding support, we would not be able to maintain this infrastructure to provide services for clients who are participating in Medicaid or managed care, and they will pay for assessment, case management, and counseling. But they won't necessarily pay for the screening, and they won't necessarily pay for engagement services, anger management, MRT, the coordination that we do when we get together with ourselves and other organizations to staff cases. All of that is really important infrastructure that is not supported by managed care or Medicaid. We are using consistent models across all of our criminal justice programs. You actually supported the process of searching for evidence-based models that would be appropriate for us to use. And so we are using moral recognition therapy, motivational interviewing, coping with anger, seeking safety is also a trauma-informed evidence-based practice, and doing individual recovery plans with clients. We think it's important that we have consistency in these models across programs, because as clients move, we want them to be receiving a consistent approach. Some challenges. We don't have access to detox in this community. That's a significant challenge for us. We don't have an assessment center or a place for law enforcement to take someone to be assessed for mental health issues, substance abuse issues, as an alternative to incarceration. We don't have a functioning mental health court right now, which would go a long way towards serving some of the population that we are trying to engage and having difficulty engaging. We have minimal space for counseling and group services at the county jail. We could use space that would allow us to meet one-on-one with clients, and it's certainly not the jail staff's fault. It's they're doing the best job that they have with the facilities that they have available to them. We have a lack of affordable housing resources for the reentry population. and lack of vocational opportunities that are specific to the criminal justice population. We certainly have some vocational services, and we're trying to build bridges with that, but in having supports that are specific to the criminal justice population remains a challenge. Some recommendations. One, monitor risk consistently in all programs. And what I refer to here is risk of recidivism, so that we have a way of knowing, based on the issues that a person is facing, what charges they have, what is their level of risk for recidivism. We need to continue to build out our ability to statistically monitor our outcomes and our results. Through the reentry council and the reentry program, we will now have the capability of having a comparison group to measure recidivism against. We don't have it yet, but we will have it. And what that will allow us to do is to look at the clients that we're serving with your funding, the clients that we are serving with the county's funding for reentry, and compare their recidivism to a similar group that did not receive services. So that will go a long way towards allowing us to measure the effectiveness of our programs and know what we can do to improve. Use revenue from managed care building to build additional capacity and close gaps in the continuum of services. Leverage the reentry council to build service infrastructure for reentry and consider local justice involved clients when building vocational housing and peer support resources. We're talking about, with the reentry population, building resources for vocational housing and peer support. It only makes sense, if we're going to do that, to also provide those services to the criminal justice population that we're serving at the jail, in an effort to reduce recidivism. We're in the process of expanding services offered on-site at probation because we think that that will be an important step towards reducing recidivism, and expand the menu of services that we're able to provide to include vocational support and life skills using a wellness support. Those are things that we would have difficulty billing as medically necessary, but we feel like would have a positive effect on the clients that we're serving. And multi-year funding commitments would provide stability needed for multi-system change. We're talking about trying to get the mental health system, the criminal justice system, law enforcement, the Department of Corrections through parole, and now we have the federal prosecutors involved in the reentry council. So trying to bring all of those systems together to have a meaningful impact on the community, having the assurance that we would have funding even for a 2-year or a 3-year period of time would help in maintaining that multi-system change effort. Thank you. I'll be happy to answer any question. Sue's flagging me to point out that as part of this, we provide services at the Time Center because there is a lot of the population that we're trying to identify at the Time Center. So we made that shift, and staff recommended that. Maybe we should just move right on to Joel's presentation and then have questions at the end. Would that make
sense? Sounds good. Well, we have a couple of questions right now.
Okay.
Can you wait? Okay, we can wait.
Okay.
I want to ask my question.
Okay.
Why don't we have the mental health court? There were a number of people and staff who went through that process twice before we were able to institute a mental health court, and I don't think they called these same people together when they decided not to have a mental health court. So I've never understood or really been told, were there too many individuals, not enough? Why wasn't Judge Peters the mental health judge?
I'd like to take this one, if that's okay.
I'm sorry, I didn't have my
It's okay. Sheila Ferguson, CEO at Community Elements. It was a decision by Judge DeFonest and Mental Health Court. We were up and running, and due to some conflicts between Julia Reitz and Judge Ford, the decision was to end at that point in time. But both Judge Ford and Julia Reitz have assured me that we can go back to those discussions, and I'm hopeful to take them up on that. I've sent messages to Julia, and I think that one of the things we're hoping to do is partner also with the university. So some of you may know Dr. Copel, Sandy Copel's at the university. She's agreed to join me along with NAMI. I'm a NAMI member, but the NAMI group would like to advocate as well. So not a dead issue, but has to get put back on the table and receive some attention. And really, it's partially Community Elements. We would have liked to have dedicated more time to it. We haven't been able to get back to it because of all the changes with managed care. And so it's back on the list, and I've talked with Julie about it, and I think we could have a small core group look at that. So I can't address why what happened, but I think it's really clear everybody wants to see it come back. So.
Okay, I'm Joel Sanders with the Urbana Police Department. I want to talk to you what law enforcement is doing through Crisis Intervention Team and our steering committee. The law enforcement portion is represented up here. There's also Community Elements attends our meetings. Sheila's there on a regular basis. Julie Reitz's office sends a representative to it. Dr. Rappaport attends many of the meetings. The hospitals are part of it. They attend the meetings. And several other providers and interested parties come on a regular basis. We meet every other month. And so what I want to do, you've got, I believe, in front of you our 2013 year-end report. I want to walk through that a little bit and then tell you a little bit where we're at now and answer any questions. Sound fair? For those who don't know, real quick, Crisis Intervention Team is officers who've gone through a 40-hour training to recognize, interact with, defuse, and geared towards services individuals who are in a mental health crisis. In October 2012, several members from local law enforcement and the individuals we just talked about, or individual groups we just talked about, got together and started discussing where we were in Champaign County and where we needed to go. That led to agreeing to meet again in December of 2012, and that then has just kind of grown into organically into the Champaign County Crisis Intervention Team Steering Committee. In 2013, we had several accomplishments. First, all the directors of the local law enforcement recognized us not just as a group who was getting together to talk, but started tasking us and asking us to give direction to the law enforcement community and looking at how we are responding and asking that we report back to them and that we create some policy so that we all responding together. We added Rantoul Police Department and we added METCAD to this group so that we're all the major law enforcement in Champaign County's functioning in a unified manner. Through this process, we were able to come and talk to you in 2013, explain our three things that we can do with somebody in a mental health crisis, which were take them to jail, take them to the hospital, or do nothing. Unfortunately, as you'll see through this, although we're scratching the surface, maybe if scratching is, it might not even be more than we're doing, but we are starting to work towards something that is more than just doing nothing. We started working with Community Elements and Presence Health to build a drop-off center for somebody who is in a mental health crisis. That, for reasons that I'm not qualified to explain, fell through. And you'll hear me talk a little bit more about what we would like from that here pretty soon. We also started working with Community Elements to develop outreach workers who could respond to our scene when we needed somebody there. the practicalities of that are very difficult because we need somebody who can get to our scene with, at the longest 30 minutes. The faster that we can get somebody there, the better. Community Element started building that program for reasons they can answer. It didn't work out, but we are readjusting with them. I've got contacts there who on a regular basis I'm calling. If we've got somebody who's a significant recidivist in the city of Urbana, somebody who's providing something that we've just not dealt with before or we're not sure how to deal with, that I can call, and within a day, if not that day, I'm sitting in a meeting with the concerned parties. We're talking about an approach, and Community Elements is then taking in whatever approach they can take to interact with this individual. I'm not sure what they're doing because they can't tell us whether they did or didn't interact with the individual, but more often than not, we're not, our contacts are ceasing with that individual. We also created a unified protocol or policy so that everybody in Champaign County, law enforcement is responding the same or in a similar fashion. We're sharing resources. If Urbana needs a crisis intervention team officer and we don't have one on duty, we can call county, they'll send us one. If county needs one, they can call us or another local close agency, we'll send them. So we're starting to not just share resources, but we're trying to make sure we're responding in the same fashion so that the consumer community knows what to expect and can receive the same services regardless of the jurisdiction they're sitting in. We had some goals we set out for this year. Some of them we've met, some of them we haven't. We implemented that countywide policy early in the year. That consisted of getting every CIT officer in the county and every frontline supervisor or sergeant in the county in a four-hour training in which we explained to them the philosophy behind the new policy, how we wanted to see it implemented, and then so did some refresher training on how to respond as a CIT officer. We're still working on a method for every agency to track our contacts. Several departments have got a method. We're still working on trying to pan that out with everybody. We began the assistance with Community Elements when the report was written. Like I said, that the direction we were going with outreach workers didn't pan out, but we are rebuilding it from the backside, and it's in a way growing to not exactly what we need, but it's growing in a way that is very useful. We worked with both hospitals. In the past, we handwrote all the petitions. If your handwriting and spelling's much like mine, they're very difficult to read, and you write real quick because it's very sloppy. We can now do all of our petitions on a computer. That gives the officers the ability to write more, to give more information to the clinician, and produce a better product and a better information for those who are making the decision. We set as a goal and quickly abandoned the goal of working closer with the psychiatrists and Presence 5 East. And we also are looking at creating an electronic reference guide. Every squad car in the involved agencies has a computer in it. And we're working on building a program we can put on those computers so that when somebody's responding, they can pull up real quick a reference guide that will point out maybe what they're dealing with and how to respond to that. Some goals we started in 14 and will be ongoing as we continue is to continue developing some in-service training for current CIT officers. Right now, you go through a 40-hour training, and that's really the only training you get. We would like to develop some training so that they are continually looking. It's a skill. If you don't use it, you lose it. We are looking at trying to build some training for individual officers who are not CIT trained. We'd like to put together an 8-hour training just to recognize mental health issues. We would like to take the electronic guide I just mentioned and build it into a more of a web-based thing. So the officer can build it on an app, can have it with them inside the residence and not have to go back out to the car if they need to use it. And continue working with Community Elements to develop a drop-off facility, much like what we were hoping to have at the Community Resource Center, someplace, if you were here when I talked the last time, someplace we can take an individual who doesn't fit the criteria for the hospital and may fit the criteria for jail, but that's not the most appropriate place for them, or doesn't fit either one of those criteria, but we don't want to just leave them on scene. And currently, that's our biggest option that we have.
You don't feel like you could just drop them off at the
final time? He won't give us his address.
All right.
So our wish list, resources, resources, and more resources. We could have every police officer in the county CIT trained, fully committed to the program, and extremely knowledgeable in it. If we don't have the resources for them to refer the families to, if we don't have the resources for them to take the individuals to, if we don't have the resources, it doesn't do us any good. We're back to the first two, either jail or the hospital. We recognize the mental health problem quicker. We recognize we're dealing with somebody who needs help. If we don't have the resource to get them that help or to guide them to that help or the family to that help, it doesn't do us any good. We would like to continue dialogue with the concerned parties. As you all know, there's not a lot of state money. Sheila can explain that better than I, but there's not a lot of money. So we need to figure out how we do this with what we have and how we can look at laws, how we can change things to make it better for the consumer, to make it better for those of us who are trying to help the consumer, and to make the system work together and not each side trying to do the best they can and have silos and cylinders out here and bring us all together more in a wagon wheel. And finally, the biggest wish we have is, and you've heard me say it several times, is a drop-off center. The best way I could describe it is something like YAC, something like the Youth Assessment Center, where it'd have to be, under current laws, it'd have to be a voluntary center. If you were here the last time, the example I used is a lady we had who was in a mental crisis at a hotel. She was criminally trespassing. We couldn't get her to go somewhere else. She didn't fit criteria for the hospital, so the only options we had was jail or leave her at this hotel. We couldn't leave her at the hotel. She went to jail. If we had a facility, it's not a guarantee she'd be willing to go. We might still end up in jail. But it would be nice to have a facility where we could say, hey, it's not the hospital, it's not jail, it's someplace that you can go and get some help. We were at Crystal Lake Park late this summer dealing with a group of individual homeless males. All of them most likely had alcohol problems. I asked them, why are we still drinking if you know you have a problem? Two of them were willing to go right then to a detox center. CU at Home has the ability to do that. Unfortunately, since they're a small group, I couldn't get a hold of anybody to take them. They wandered away. So we need the resources to better do our job with the community. Questions? And I think, or we can do them at the end, which might be better.
Well, we have one more person to present.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, it's only me. Don't worry, I won't take long. So from the corrections, from the jail perspective, my name's Alan Jones. I'm the chief deputy of the sheriff's office. And several years ago, I'd served 2 years as the jail superintendent. In the past year, my capacity's changed. But when we put this together and came to this board and asked for funding and supporting this, we were trying to do with what we could as best we could. But bottom line is we don't want to have this population in our jail. We're not a treatment. We don't have the capacity to treat anybody, those words that you always hear. And it's just not the best place. Plus, if you haven't heard, we've got issues that we have to deal with and the capabilities of having the jails in combinations or separate or however that's going to be, and that's a whole other meeting tomorrow night. The process that we've set up now is primarily engaged in catching those that do arrive at the jail. It was primarily focused on what we termed as frequent flyers, and essentially dealt with a little pilot project we did where we said, here's the list of people who've been over X number of times. How many of them have been your clients, Prairie Center? How many have been your clients, Community Elements? Francis Nelson, how many? And then we've kind of built on from there. And you've heard Bruce talked about some of the engagements and all this, but catch the point here is that these folks have ended up in jail. And those that belong, we make no bones about that. You commit the crime, the charges are filed, the judges think they need to stay. Those issues are not what I'm talking about. Those that are experiencing crisis situations and the options could exist for alternatives besides the jail, could, but they don't. That's the group that we have that we want to do something with. And what we have in place, quite frankly, in my opinion, is working. Because of what's been funded and what's taking place, there are routine phone calls from the staff at Community Elements who's managing this project in the jail to our command staff in the jail, from the command staff in the jail to the state's attorney's office, from the state's attorney's office who sees all the reports that come in, not just the arrests, but all the non-arrests and other contacts, communicating, saying, for example, so-and-so was charged with a crime. What's the current mental status of this person? Do they get an evaluation, if you will, by the mental health services at the jail? And do they believe that they are to a point where they might need to be taken to the hospital for an involuntary petition? Would the state consider, or in these cases, to go there? There can't be under charges at the time. There's a lot of things that kind of take place where we're communicating together and better. And we have a process set up, started a few years ago, when I noticed somebody would come to jail with one of these type offenses. I would have the already prearranged, I'll send an email or make a phone call directly to the chief myself. Check this report. Check this alternative. Check this process. And these CIT commitments that Lieutenant Sanders went over and some of the things that you heard from Bruce and that group have really, really started to kick in and open up the communications for us that we wouldn't have had if we didn't have the funding to put this together. But again, let me remind you, the focus is once they've already in jail. All right, we've got several different things going on. They've used the term silo. That's my big thing. Bruce likes to laugh at me. I don't want him in the jail. I'm going to continue to say that. There's no need, there's no benefit that's going to come to any of us as we work through this. And so without the challenges that we're, addressing the challenges that we're seeing that Bruce identified, the detox, the assessment center, the mental health, these different things, I agree with. What Joel talked about was the drop-off facility, and some of you, if not all of you, watched the video here that was shared with you by your board members, and those types of things. Yeah, that'd be great. And as I sit and I go to these different meetings, I participate in the Reentry Council, I travel to other places around the state. These are all programs that are set up after people come to jail. And in all honesty, when you have funding for reentry, funding for our case management, we're still lacking. There's a lot more we can do at the jail or with this program right here, but we don't really have the funding or capacity to do it. But if some way we kind of meld those two together and get all the funding and everything operating in one place where we're providing services and, better yet, case management when they were to get out to help them find these places, that's going to probably alleviate what we as police are having to do and corrections officers in the jail, which is not our primary role. The other side of that situation is if you can find a place to be, detox, housing, these different models that are out there before they get to the jail. That's not an operation of the sheriff's office, these day reporting centers and other things that have been proposed in the community, but they may have some validity to them. The challenge ahead of the community, to this board and the others and funding sources, is how to put that all together. We've got ideas. We've looked at different things. There's a lot of them out there. We need to find the one, in my opinion, that's most similarly situated to Midwest Central Illinois setting as opposed to big city San Jose, Seattle, or New York, those kind of things. But we have issues that we can address in scale and different ways. Bottom line, in my opinion, and that of the sheriff's office, we're grateful that we have what we have in place right now. Because what we have in place right now is getting us ahead, if you will, but giving us the opportunity to better serve those that we are responsible for caring for and charged with caring for in the jail. And if we can do any piece, any part, whether it be through the CIT when I wear my law enforcement badge, or whether it be on the mental health and support side when I wear my corrections officer badge, what all we can put together is dependent upon these different groups, the different fundings, these different communications, conversations that are taking place, and the direction we go. There's a lot to do. I don't know if I had the answer, man. I could probably go around the country and make big, big, big money, right? You guys want to join me? But, yeah, thank you. And let's try to find a way to continue this, combine it, you know, move on. Let's. We don't know what we don't know, so let's get better at it. And that's kind of how my wrap-up goes.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Could I make a comment?
Now we have some comments and questions.
Could I make a comment? Just a moment. Turn it on. Obviously, I'm very comfortable with Chief Deputy Jones. And I just wanted to say he's been involved in law enforcement in this community for a good many years, maybe not quite as long as I have, but a good many years. And every job he's undertaken has been done with a very professional and appropriate approach. And I'm very pleased that what I've heard from all of you this evening, but since I kind of picked on Alan at the start, I just wanted to reassure you that I have the highest respect for him. Thank you.
Thank you. Very kind.
Thanks, Michael. Susan?
I've got a couple of comments and questions. I too would like to say how grateful I am for the CIT program. I've made 9/11 calls probably a dozen times in the last 7 years because I have a son who's 21 and mentally ill, and it started to manifest when he was around 14. And the CIT officers have certainly diffused situations that could have become very unmanageable, even unsafe. And so that is a wonderful program. I am so grateful that we have it. I made a 9/11 call in June because my son called me and was clearly incoherent in a state of rage, and I was afraid he was going to hurt someone. And I knew where he was. And I was truly grateful that Champaign, Urbana, U of I, police almost arrived spontaneously at the same time at Covenant Hospital in the parking lot where my son was. He was arrested. He had in fact engaged in harming someone and was stopped from going back and harming that person again. He went to jail for the first time. I felt that he was safe at jail, so I was comforted by that, distraught over the fact that I didn't know how to deal with his issues. He's a client at Community Elements. We were grateful for the help we've gotten at Community Elements. While he was in jail for 35 days or thereabouts, I took his medication, and I talked to you about this at one point this summer, and for whatever reason, the group that manages the behavioral health in the jail would not allow him to have his medicine. And he needed to be on his psychotropic medicines. I called Dr. Welch's psychiatrist. That office called the jail, and basically the message was, no, he's not been consistent, so he's not getting any meds. He was released a week before I anticipated. I had no place for him to go. He had not been on his meds at that point for probably 45 to 60 days. And once again, I was very concerned about my safety, his safety, and the safety of other people. I couldn't get him into the time center because he hadn't been on his medication. I was able to find a program outside of our county where he was able to go and get services. Unfortunately, he walked away from that program and walked the 55 miles back to our county, and we're starting all over again with a mental health treatment plan on Friday at Community Elements. But he is prime recidivism candidate because he has no place to live, he has no skills, he has developmental disabilities, he has mental illness, and I could not find any services for him, and I am worn out from trying to do so. And he doesn't particularly want me to help him. So it's one of those issues where, you know, if we'd had a drop-off center, I took him to the hospital a week before he was arrested because I knew that he was going into a bipolar swing, and there was no place to go but the hospital. And the hospital said, are you suicidal? Are you homicidal? And he said, no. And they said, well, then you don't need to be here. So I think it's not that I want to tell my personal story so much. I'm grateful for the things that we have, but we don't have enough. And to be able to see half of the services delivered and then the other half not, I think what good is the first half if we can't have some kind of follow through? And I don't have any solutions. I'm on the board in part because I'm very interested in what could be done in our community. I guess that's all I really have to say, but I was concerned that there was a lack of communication between Community Elements, whatever agency works on behavioral health in the jail, because my son had a case manager from Community Elements who tried to communicate with the jail. My son's psychiatrist tried to communicate with the jail, and you know, that would have been a wonderful time to get him back on his meds. But apparently that's also not the role of the jail. Subcoordination, I think, is really needed. It was, from my point of view, a real lost opportunity and a real point of frustration.
Thank you, Susan. Did you have a comment, Julian?
Quite a story, so I don't want to just let it slide away. Because my guess is that there are people who live in this community in similar circumstances who don't have an articulate parent to say what their story is. I'm guessing this is not an isolated case. And actually, each person here said, in one form or another, that what we need is some way. I mean, it was said in different ways, as I hear it. But the idea of having an alternative to jail helps at every level. I think each of the people who presented in one form or another had that to say, that, you know, what you're getting is people who are already in jail, or what you're getting is we're talking about going to the hospital, and yet we can't get an agreement on what to do, and there's no alternative, or the officers who are... Frankly, it's been delightful for me. I think I want to say this actually, really publicly. It's been delightful for me to see the CIT training, how well it's done. How many people in law enforcement, contrary, I think, to general stereotypes, are not only good at it, but care about it, and don't want to arrest people, and don't want to take them to jail unless there's some compelling legal reason to do so, but they're stuck. I think it's an absolute abomination that this community doesn't have an alternative. So why am I saying all this? Just because here we are all together from different perspectives, I think thinking the same thing, and I guess the question that I have is how do we get our county board and county officials to take this problem on seriously, not as a debate, a political debate, about who's winning and losing and which party you're in, but to recognize this as a community issue. How do we get public health involved in this? I never hear of any interest in public health in these kinds of questions. So, and the cities. I mean, not just the police of the cities, but the city governments. I mean, this is a problem for our community that I think, I guess I'm now speaking, I'm using this is an opportunity to speak to my colleagues on the mental health board and to anybody else who cares to make an issue out of it in their community to speak, to figure out how we can in fact develop a coalition of people who want to deal with this problem. Not to position power or control, but to just work together to deal with a genuine community issue. It's an unbelievable that in a community of this size and this capacity and this number of educated people that we simply refuse to figure out some way that provides law enforcement with the resources they need to do their job. I mean, it's just amazing to me that we don't seem to be able to do that. The mental health board itself cannot do that. We can contribute to it, and we've tried to ever since Lieutenant Sanders first presented this material on the officers' concrete daily situation. We've been trying to figure out how to be helpful, and I'm glad that we're somewhat been helpful. But we need to figure out, this has to go beyond people who are in mental health as professionals doing it. This needs to have government support, and we need to figure out how to communicate this to the county board. I know that there's at least one county board member in the audience right now who's also interested in it, and in fact has pushed the question certainly to me.
Okay, raise your hand.
How do we get together? How do we move ahead? And we have also a county board member right here.
Two. We have Maxwell and Asterisk. We have three.
So, how do we get this heard?
Let's tell our story.
Okay, I just wanted to make a comment. I know it's a jail mental health issue, but I had an experience about a week ago, well, last Tuesday, a man who has been diagnosed as paranoid, schizophrenic, bipolar, a lot of different mental health issues. So he was trying to seek treatment in this community. And for some odd reason, he called me because he thought I had some power because I'm on the mental health board. So we went to three facilities starting at 3:30, and we were turned away from two of those facilities and told to go to Provena Presence Emergency Center. And they did a great job and, worked with him, but it took 4 or 5 hours, and as you did your presentation, if we had that resource center, I could have just taken him there, and he could have gotten what he needed, and we could have been on our way without, you know, this rejection. Well, we don't take Medicare and other things. Well, you know, the psychiatrist is busy, and, we need to get back to you. So, it is frustrating to people, and he didn't have any belligerent behaviors. He just said, I need to see somebody because I'm in a crisis. So I think we need, like Julian said, put our resources together. And this community has a wealth of resources. So if we really want to come up with a center, I think we can do it. I agree with you. Peter?
Just before you go, Sheila, I wanted to mention, I want to remind the board that in our priorities for the next funding cycle, which is coming up, we have a memo in there, and obviously criminal justice, mental health is one of our priorities that we've listed. We will finalize that next month, and I guess I would encourage the providers to think about submitting additional applications with what they think is needed and what the next steps are. As you know, we also funded the architectural study for Time Center as a possible drop-off place. And I guess, Sheila, you can talk about that a little bit.
Yeah,
But I just want to remind you that the funding cycle's coming up, and this board can use our resources any way we want to use them.
I actually wanted to let the group know in case, and really this last couple of years, we've been working really hard at Community Elements to be part of the strategic plan for all organizations. So this year, and our board just heard about it last week, is that
We're part of the I-Plan, which is the public health plan that comes out for strategic planning, so Julian's point. And actually, the component related to behavioral health, I chair it, and there are 32 organizations that are part of that study. I'll share it with Pete, and maybe he can get it out to the board members. There's some very targeted areas, but one of the most important is capacity building within the behavioral health system. The second that we felt really very good about was the work we've been doing with Sue Gray and United Way, and their Bridge the Gap, which is their three, they picked three main areas which to target their fundraising for. One was kindergarten readiness, one's homeless children, of which there were 300 identified at the point in time study, and the third was to build capacity for behavioral health. So we've been now able to get in each of the strategic plans for some of the major either fundraisers or organizations that serve the population and take a public health perspective on the community. So I know my discussions with Alan and certainly the CIT members has been to try to bring everybody together to put a proposal together. So I just wanted to share, I think this is the first time that we've seen all of these organizations identify a behavioral health component that's missing and an interest in being at the table. So I know that Mark also comes to those meetings and has participated. So we have the I-Plan and the Bridge the Gap, and of course the work that you're doing, and we will have a priorities recommendation to Pete too. So thanks.
Thank you, Sheila. Mike?
Reflecting on Susan's experience and also on Julian's questions, sometimes it amazes me how far back my memory reaches. That happens as you get older. But how do you get attention? How do you focus on this? As we've commented many times, or at least I have, the newspapers don't come, the television and radio people, they don't come. It was much more exciting on the Champaign School Board back in the day. But how do you focus attention? Well, it's kind of like trying to get a stop sign by your local grade school. Somebody's got to be killed. And what that brings home to me, and actually both instances apply to my old neighborhood. I lived for many years at John and James, but it now in Champaign, and now it strikes me that's been over 20 years ago. But shortly, I can't remember just how long, but one of the neighbors down the street on John Street had a son who might have been described very much as Susan's son. Mm-hmm. And I know that they had worked on this and tried to get somewhere, but he was living at home, and one day he killed his father. Made a pretty good effort at killing his mother, and then took off for Westview School, which was just a half a block away, where, God bless him, the principal actually reined him in and was able to contain him until the police came. There was a lot of discussion then, and I'm sure that there was probably some progress, but that was over 20 years ago. Not too many years ago, I think we had one of our best sessions we've had as a board involved having recipients of care, clients, come in and talk about their interactions and their perceptions of being on the street with police officers. And that, I thought, that was one of the most impressive presentations I've seen. And I think it also led to some short-term changes. I think that was right after the Champaign third shift rendered that mentally ill fellow inert on the street. So it's not the, these things are ignored.
I
feel more encouragement right now with this group with what we're talking about, and I hope we can keep this going and stick with it. My question is, and I can already see a ton of holes in this, but not too many years ago, a lot of our sheltering of homeless was done in the churches, primarily, the one I think most of is the University Presbyterian Church.
McKinley.
Again, I can see all sorts of holes already, but is there a possibility of making a connection like that and maybe having the School of Social Work or someone from the university help with personnel? I guess you can't have a psychologist sitting there 24 hours a day.
Well, actually,
but that's just something I would throw out.
The fact is there's no prevention money. And the fact is the ACA allows for increased benefits for people, but they are treatment-focused and medically necessary. So until you have a situation that brings attention to it, you can't access services. And then when we want to access services, no one wants to fund us at a rate that which we can keep staff in there. So Bruce's comment was really a comment from all of us saying, if we're funded from year to year and we change our funding priorities all the time, our staff don't stay stable in those positions. Our staff are underpaid when you compare us to any other, and compare us to the VA or managed care. We really are undervalued, and so with the cuts with prevention, managed care taking only the piece of responsibility related to medical necessity, we really have circumvented prevention and really undervalued the people who do this work. So it becomes very hard to keep that momentum and stability. And that's my comment. Sorry, a little platform there, but
thank you.
Well, thank you, Sheila. Thank you, all the Bruce and Jones. Ellen Jones, and for coming. And you made some very great points, and hopefully we will have some continued discussions until we get the whole job done, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Okay, we can move on to, we have a draft allocation criteria in our packet that you can look at. Is for FY 2016. And then there's also an Access Initiative Sustainability briefing memorandum, and it's a blueprint for a post-cooperative agreement. So you can look at that, and we will make a decision about that in November. And then you also have the Mental Health Board Performance Outcome Reports that have been put together, and they're very interesting to read, so I encourage you to do that. So, do you have any questions or comments about any of those things that I mentioned in the agenda? Anybody? Peter?
Just a quick comment. On the priority, there's a couple of new things. We have an expanded section on wellness to deal with the disparities between the mortality disparities between the general population and people with serious mental illness and disabilities. I think what we want is if there are any things that the board would like to add to our priorities or eliminate. So this is a briefing just for you to look at. We will come back with a decision memo in November on this, as well as the Access Sustainability Plan.
Thank you, Peter. Okay, now let's look at old business. Barb, would you like to come up and comment about that extraordinary Disabilities Expo?
Sure. Okay, well, yes, it's over. We have finished our eighth annual, and I think it was seen as very successful. We had 84 exhibitors there, 15, I believe, of which were new ones. So that was kind of neat to see some new resources coming in. I believe we had 22 Pride vendors in our art room, and they just did a beautiful job. And I understand that they sold a lot of their art, so that's really neat to know that occurred. Starting about 2 weeks before the expo, I started getting more and more calls of organizations, businesses that wanted in as exhibitors. So we already have kind of a nice list for next year going. Unfortunately, they had to be turned away because we had to stop at some point to do our maps and so on. So I did speak with Jeff Grant, who is the owner of Fluid Events, and because I'd had people asking me, well, how many people were there, which I couldn't answer, of course, because we didn't really have a good way to count that. We didn't have Bill there with his clicker. He was there, but not with his clicker. So anyway, he said based on his concessions and the fact the parking lot was completely packed, he guessed somewhere between 2,000 and 3,000 folks were there. So it's quite a few, much more than in previous years. So that's good. The resource directories, please don't leave without your resource directory. And if you need additional ones, take what you need. We have more that we can get for you. So I will have, I wasn't able to get it ready for today's meeting, but we'll have the exhibitor and attendee evaluations for your next meeting, a summary of those. That's
all I got. Thank you very much, and keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Okay, the number, item B is the addendum to the intergovernmental agreement, decision memorandum, and addendum to the agreement that we have with the DD board. So Peter would like to say a few things about that.
Yes, this is the agreement related to the Scylla expansion project. The Developmental Disabilities Board, they approved this at their last meeting. We were out of time, so we didn't get to this last time. And basically, it just acknowledges that both boards are partners in this process, and any you know, the equity in the homes at the end of the project is split, you can see it. So I urge approval.
I move the approval.
Has been moved. We need a second.
Second.
Been moved and second. So do any board members have questions or comments about it before we approve it? Okay, hearing none. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, so the motion carries. Okay, now we are down to 15 board announcements. Do we have any board announcements real quickly? If not, I need a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Moved and second. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Thanks. Thanks for coming. We'll see you next month.
Okay, we've done well. It's actually 6 minutes until 6. The Developmental Disabilities Board meeting starts at 6 o'clock. So mental health board members are certainly welcome to stay, and we will shift gears now.